Welcome to Real Romance, courtesy of the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Good morning, Real Romance! This is your host, Robert Andreg, and I'm here with my wife, Brittany.
Hello, I hated that.
I know, but it's in honor of the one and only Robin Williams. For this month, in honor of the documentary that dropped, the documentary Robin's Wish dropped at the beginning of September, and we wanted to have a podcast revolving around a few Robin Williams movies that are not really like the big hitters or some of the things that kind of happened later in his career.
Yeah.
Things that we haven't seen a lot of. Okay, well, let's talk about animated voiceover work, because he did 4 or 5 animated movies in his career.
Remember that movie Aladdin?
Yeah.
Well, right before he did Aladdin, he did another movie that some people watch, but not as many, called Fern Gully.
Yeah, it's kind of like how Ants came right before Bug's Life and no one knows what Ants is.
I mean, pretty much, but Fern Gully and Aladdin are not the same movie.
Yes, very different feels. So, much like in Aladdin, he plays a side character called Batty. We rewatched Fern Gully. It's something that we watched as kids.
That movie's depressing.
It's been a long time, but I forgot, like,
all of it?
How dark it is. Yeah.
Batty's literally a character that escaped from a science lab where kids put, like, an antenna on his head and were experimenting on him.
Yeah. So, the basic story is that in the middle of the forest, there's kind of a secluded race of fairies. But there are a lot of, like, bugs, and they can talk, and they're just doing their own thing. They don't interact with people, for good reason.
They think people are dead.
Yeah, but there's stories that they're still out there somewhere, kind of like in the Great Beyond type thing. But they end up having Batty kind of, like, charge into their area, and he's like, the humans are bad, right?
Right, he has a whole song about it.
Mm-hmm. And so the main character, I forget her name, Fern Gully is the name of the place they live, right?
Crystal
sounds right.
No, it wasn't Crystal. It was something like that, like Krista.
Krista. And Krista goes out to find where he came from, I think, and comes across a logger, a guy who's chopping down trees.
Zach.
And he's trying to trap her because she has like a mist across her face, right? He can't tell that it's a fairy.
Something like that. There's, like, some kind of thing that, like, prevents people from seeing them, and she gives him, like, fairy sight or some such nonsense.
Mm-hmm. But because she's young, she accidentally turns him...
small.
...into the size of the fairies, and he kind of, like, sees what their world is like.
And he's, like, in love with her.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, their whole operation is, like, deforestation and putting pollution out into the natural ecosystem, and essentially fucking up, like, the whole world.
And they cut down this big tree that releases the villain, Hexus, played by Tim Curry.
Yeah, and he plays it so good. He has a song about pollution or oil or something similar. And, man, he's creepy. Definitely a mix between Pennywise and Frankenfurter.
Well, it's not just called Fern Gully. It's called Fern Gully, the last rainforest. Like, they're literally cutting down
the end of it.
The end of trees.
Done. Through the movie, there's quite a few songs. The animation is definitely 90s.
Not in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Cheech and Chong are in it, apparently, too.
As, like, some side...
like, some minor voice characters.
There's some weird side fairies.
By the end, don't they convince, like, the guy that they need to stop and... they save the day.
And he goes back big, and he's gonna help save the forest.
Yeah.
The end.
Pretty much.
Except nothing changed.
And there's a sequel.
Where they
I never saw the sequel.
The sequel is literally about poachers.
Oh.
Kidnapping baby animals.
So it really has nothing to do with the first one.
I mean, it's just still about humans being bad.
Accurate.
So.
Okay, so let's talk about Robin Williams in this one. Because he honestly kind of has a minor role, but he does have a rap song.
He has top billing, too.
Yeah, because he's Robin freaking Williams. But his rap song is...
it was decent.
It's kind of fun. Like, it's no Prince Ali.
No.
It's no, never had a friend like me, but it is fun and different.
Well, I don't think he wrote it.
So out of 5 popcorn buckets, what would you give Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest?
When I was a kid, I really liked it, but I also think that I watched the second one a lot more than I watched the first, so maybe I remember liking it better.
And so, I don't think he voiced Batty in that one.
So I would give it a 2.
I'd give it like a 1.5. The message is strong, but the execution is just pretty crap, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like too old for a kids' movie, but there wasn't a whole lot for adults to latch onto either.
Yeah.
Other than People Are Horrible.
It's pretty subpar on both fronts. What other voice work did he do? Now, we know he did Aladdin as the genie.
Yeah.
And then he reprised it in the third one.
Right.
And didn't he do the TV show too?
I'm not sure.
I don't think so. But his most iconic voice work is for Genie. But he also was in Robots.
And Happy Feet.
And Happy Feet as Lovelace. Right?
Loveless?
Mm-hmm. No, he pronounces it Lovelace.
I don't think that's his name.
You sure?
Oh, I thought his name was Ramon.
No, Ramon is the little shorty.
I think he plays both.
Does he play both? Well, I guess that would make sense.
That's why I was confused. He does. I was like, I'm pretty sure his name is Ramon, but okay.
No, his name is Lovelace. I guess so. But that's the thing, is like, he is so good at voices and impressions.
You know Elijah Wood is Mumble?
I thought I knew that, but now that you say it, thanks for reminding me.
I didn't know that.
But
side note.
Anywho, he's really known for his impressions and his voice being very unique.
I actually thought Robots, he has a really strong character in that.
He's a really good main role in that, I think. But we didn't want to talk about Aladdin because he's just so popular in that's been rehashed so many times. I would like to say, though, that there was a ton of controversy behind him being Aladdin the first time, or being in Aladdin the first time, because...
Well, it wasn't so much being in it. He did the movie with the idea that he would be the genie, but that they were supposed to still promote the movie being about Aladdin and Jasmine.
Right. And for that, he took a really low
salary.
Like, he took the base pay, not like his super megastar voice work.
Correct. So that they could get him in the movie.
Right.
Then all of the posters, all of the toys were all genie.
In big, bold letters. Robin Williams
as the genie.
And he's like, whoa, what the fuck? This isn't right, because I'm also in this movie, Fern Gully.
And they can't afford to market the same way.
Yeah, and so Fern Gully made peanuts in the box office and was not critically acclaimed, but granted, it wasn't as good a movie, let's be honest. But it wasn't fair to Fern Gully for Disney to be marketing it like that.
It wasn't fair to the stars of the movie, either. The movie's called Aladdin, not The Genie.
Yeah.
And then, so he didn't come back for the second movie, but then Disney had some turnover in management, because the management wasn't exactly the greatest when they made Aladdin.
And Robin, because he was a bigger star like 5 years later, he charged a buttload.
Did he?
Yes. He went in and he says, all right, the bridges are mended. We can do the third one. But I'm not taking low pay this time. Yeah. If you want me, you're going to pay for the amount that I should have made on the first one.
Yeah, they definitely paid him more, I'm
and
sure.
King of Thieves was actually a better movie. Way better than Return of Jafar.
Well, I think the whole second movie was pushed out so fast. A lot of studios are guilty of that, where they are like, oh, we need a sequel to this amazing movie. And even though, you know, the first one might have taken, say, 3 years. Nah, I mean, that's just an average. Now, I know animated movies take longer.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll be like, no, we need the next one out in 2 years. Now. We need it out now before kids lose it.
I'm glad Frozen waited. They did a lot of mini stuff, which was a great filler while they worked on the big movie.
Right.
That was smart.
They didn't let you forget that Frozen was a thing.
Right. And I mean, Shrek did it well. They didn't, like, skimp on the
quality. Well, Shrek did it well for the second one, but then they kind of started to...
No, but what I'm saying is, like, you know, How You Train Your Dragon. A lot of the anime movies that are getting sequels now, they actually give them time.
Have you ever looked at the animation quality in Aladdin 2?
It's bad.
It's very bad.
Jasmine looks like traced on. Yeah, it's awful.
I feel like I could have animated Jasmine in the second movie, and I have never animated a single thing.
Yes. But I've also seen you try to sketch the dogs.
That's what Jasmine looked like.
Pretty much. It's like, it's so irregular from frame to frame, it's hard to kind of keep it up.
It's like some of the frames were really good, but then the other frames look like scribbles.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about another one. You want to talk about Flubber?
Sure. Okay. Another Disney movie.
Yes, another Disney, but this one is live action. And it's actually based on an older movie called The Absent-Minded Professor, which is essentially the same thing. He creates Flubber. So the story...
No, he creates flying rubber. Flubber.
The story, the base story, is that he is very forgetful but very brilliant. And he's a professor at a college, and he's trying to save his department by coming up with the next big thing.
How many times did you tell me that he was the absent-minded professor?
Like 40 times.
I kept being like, why is he forgetting?
Why isn't he going to his own wedding? Why doesn't he remember this and that and the other? And I'm like, because they named it Flubber, but it's based on the absent-minded professor. That's the whole idea, is that he's smart but forgetful. So he's trying to save his department, his physics department or whatever. He accidentally, or it's not really by accident, but he, unexpected results.
Yeah.
He creates this semi-sentient substance that's green, and it's bouncy, and it's flexible, and it defies the laws of physics.
Correct.
And
it defies all the laws.
And he calls it Flubber. But essentially, it retains kinetic energy in such a way that instead of displacing it and losing kinetic energy, it gains it. So when it's bouncing, it'll bounce higher and higher, faster and faster, rather than slowing down like your average golf ball or rubber ball would.
Also, can we talk about how weird it is that Flubber was, like, alive, but then he would, like, use it on stuff, yeah, and just, like, squish it around?
And, like, spray it on things. And
like, that's weird, right?
It is weird. He uses it as an adhesive for, like, the bottom of shoes and on, like, golf balls and things to make them fly. He puts it in his car so that his car can fly. The science is really not
plausible.
Like,
it doesn't make any sense.
But for a kid's movie starring Robin Williams and a sporting cast that's pretty good, too.
You mean Weebo?
Weebo.
That's super uncomfortable because she's, like, in love with him, but she's a flying little robot.
Yeah, kind of an AI thing. Also, it's, like, the beginning of meme culture with Weebo. You notice, like, she has this little screen, and rather than, like, say what she's feeling, she'll just show a movie clip. Disney, mostly. Mostly as a nod to other Disney stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always, like, a clip of Disney things. Like, instead of I'm Sleepy, they're showing Sleepy from the Seven Dwarfs.
Right.
And I think that's why GIFs are a thing. I think it is solely it is solely attributed to Weebo from Flubber.
Hot
yes.
take.
Yes, and I'll stand by that.
All right, give it a bucket rating.
Oof, it's enjoyable. I'd give it a 3.
Agreed, a 3.
Mm-hmm. But that's not just like he really relied on kids' movies too. He did adult stuff, but he did a lot of kids' movies back then. Right, I think Jack was considered a kid's movie.
Was it?
My favorite movie, arguably non-superhero favorite movie, would be Hook. And we were going to watch Hook for this podcast. But we wanted to watch things that we either haven't seen or haven't seen in a long time to discuss it. And can I just say that he plays Peter Pan and he does a phenomenal job playing like kind of the jaded child that didn't want to grow up and then ended up becoming like a corporate dickhead.
I mean, yeah.
And so he has to kind of learn what it's like to be a kid again. The supporting cast is great. Julia Roberts is Tinkerbell. Bob Hoskins is Smee. Dustin Hoffman plays Hook. Such a great movie. Fairy tale, 100%. And I still listen to the score on a regular basis because it is done by the irreplaceable John Williams, who did like Star Wars and Jurassic Park and Jaws and all that fun stuff.
Alright, so the next movie we watched was definitely more adult,
mm-hmm.
right?
I mean,
it is rated R, so it's pretty adult. It's called Insomnia, and I mean, Robin isn't the star. I would definitely put him as, like, a co-star.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the star, Al Pacino, is a detective who gets called into this murder of this girl up in a small town in Alaska.
Hoo-ah!
And Hilary Swank is, like, a junior detective who's trying to learn the ranks, and Al Pacino's this, like, really famous detective, apparently, some kind of hero detective.
Yeah, he's from, like, L.A., and he has
Chicago.
No?
Oh, you're right, L.A.
But he has, like, a lot of big cases under his belt.
They start investigating, and it ends up leading Al Pacino to Robin Williams' character, who is an author who, I mean, we find out murdered this girl.
Right, but he writes detective novels, and so he kind of gets into the head of both killers and cops. That's kind of his thing.
Right, and he ends up blackmailing Al and is like, hey, well, we can just find a scapegoat, and you won't have to go to jail, and I won't have to go to jail, and it's all good.
Right, because they almost have Robin Williams' character. Like, they almost have him nailed down, but it's really foggy out, and Al Pacino's character ends up shooting his partner, thinking it's Robin Williams.
And rather than tell the truth, he covers it up.
Right, and so Robin Williams is like, I know what you did. So now it's a cover-up for both of them. And
he's like, I'm not going to do it again. I didn't mean to kill her. It was an accident. But if you know anything about killers, like, it was textbook, you know, first murder for a serial killer. This guy was going to kill again.
And we find out that Al Pacino, he's no saint either, right? Like, some of his...
I don't want to tell what it was, because that's kind of a big twist. But basically, he did something bad. Like,
right, he's under investigation by...
For the IAB, by IAB.
Right.
He did something bad for a good reason. I'm not saying what he did was right, but I totally understand why he did it.
But it's kind of like getting audited. Like, even if you make things right for the right reason, but you bend the rules to do it, it kind of disqualifies you as a...
I mean, because even though we know that what he did was for a good reason, if every cop did what they thought was right for a good reason, we'd have a whole lot of innocent people in jail, which... has happened.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't even do it for the right reason. They just do it to get a conviction so that they can close a case.
That's a whole nother topic.
Yeah, but overall, Robin Williams playing a killer, he plays misunderstood, he plays like he's the victim.
But he definitely also plays evil. He's like, you see him playing the victim and like, oh, this was an accident, I really cared about her, but if you look into, like, you watch him, you can really see that killer undertone, that serial killer hidingness. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed there was only one murder
and it wasn't,
by Robin Williams in this film.
And it wasn't even, like, big and flashy like a big murder.
It was an interesting MO. Like, he beats her to death, and then he washes her and clips her nails.
Yeah.
I mean, that was fascinating.
Mm-hmm. But overall, how many popcorn buckets would you give it?
3.5.
I'd give it a 3.5 or a 4. It's a solid movie.
I deducted some points because there wasn't a Not enough murder.
I just appreciated that it was such a good, dramatic, serious role for Robin. And we're so used to seeing him like a goofball.
He does a lot of work with his voice over the telephone in this too, which was interesting.
Yeah, and there's not a single joke. He doesn't tell a single joke in the whole movie.
Not like a ha-ha-ha joke.
Like, sometimes he'll say things that are, you know, situationally like, huh. But he's not a funny character in this at all.
Mm-mm.
And even though he does have a history of taking more serious roles, that's not what he's known for. So the next one we're going to talk about was Night at the Museum 3, The Secret of the Tomb. And this was actually the last movie
with Robin Williams in it that came out.
Yeah.
After he was dead.
Yes.
And it was I think it was the last movie he filmed.
Mm-hmm. If you're aware of the Night Museum series, Ben Stiller plays an overnight museum security guard. And there's a magical...
Tablet
that ends up bringing all the inanimate things in the museum to life. And among them are a statue of Teddy Roosevelt, played by Robin Williams. Owen Wilson is also in this. Rami Malek is also in it. Dan Stevens. It's a whole big cast of characters that are brought to life from historical figures. Ben Stiller even plays himself. He's in it twice. Once as himself and once as a caveman.
Not as himself.
As the security guard.
Right.
but then there's a caveman version of him that's been added in, and it's just, it's really funny.
That was a really funny addition.
But in the movie, they find out that the tablet's losing its magic, and there are other Egyptian pieces that are split between the one in New York and the one in London, right? Right. And so they have to take all of the stuff over to Britain,
mm-hmm.
to take it to the Egyptian's Rami Malek's father or something.
Basically, they were only supposed to take the tablet and Rami's character, the Achman Ra.
Mm-hmm.
They were only supposed to take them, but everybody else stowed away in this surprisingly large box.
Yeah, like, they shipped this giant-ass crate overseas overnight. Okay, just don't sweat the details, all right?
Okay.
It's not important.
And Ben Stiller's character brings his son, who's having a really hard time, like, with what he's going to do in the future, and Ben's having a really hard time, like, letting him go. And basically... Rebel Wilson's a security guard.
Yeah.
She works for the British Museum.
She's not in a whole lot, but she does add a little bit of comic relief.
She's kind of annoying, but what she usually is.
Yeah.
Basically, they have to figure out why the tablet's failing, and then the character Lancelot,
Dan Stevens,
ends up trying to sabotage them.
Right, no, because his whole thing was like, it's a quest.
Right.
Right? And so he ends up, like, stealing the tablet and trying to go back to Camelot.
But Camelot's not real.
He's a goofball. And there's a really fun cameo. I don't want to give away who it is, but good God, as a superhero fan, the cameo is just...
really funny.
Freaking hilarious. In the end, they end up solving the problem, and the problem is that it's just not getting enough moonlight.
Apparently it's a moonlight tablet.
Yeah, and if it's not exposed to the light of the moon,
that's how you can tell
it loses its power.
That's how you can tell it's a kid's movie, because the solution was, take it outside and put it all right.
Yeah, very simple solution. Literally could just take it outside. I'm wondering, wouldn't it have made sense, like, if you're going to travel overseas, instead of, like, packing in a crate where things get lost on an airplane... wouldn't you put it in your carry-on?
No, because carry-on... I don't know. Because the mummy, they put them together.
I suppose. But yeah, it's just
you
like...
you can't put a mummy in your carry-on, Robert.
I don't know. Maybe.
They have size restrictions. He was short, but not that short.
But I'm just thinking, like, you bring it with you, it kind of hits the moonlight. Oh, look at that. It's...
how?
Ooh, you're outside, like...
but it's in your bag.
I suppose.
But you can definitely tell that Robin slows down in this one. Looking at the first two, he was a lot more active. Not that he wasn't good. He still was good.
But we know what Robin Williams looks like. We know his very vibrant, happy, excited mindset. And in this, he was a bit more subdued. A bit less...
Robin.
And it's sad.
They talk about it in the documentary about it. And...
mm-hmm. Yeah, the director,
really sad.
The director of Night at the Museum was like, look, we noticed these things about him. He was always concerned, hey, am I doing a good job? Is the scene going right? And they kept having to, like, reassure him, like, yes, you're doing a good job. But they knew something was up. And it was undiagnosed what he had, and we'll talk about that later. After finding out, a lot of the puzzle pieces started to come together to explain why Robin Williams wasn't his old self. What would you give it in popcorn buckets?
I would give it a 3.5.
Yeah.
It wasn't as good as the first two, but it was still really good.
Yeah, they kind of forced some of the jokes, but you can only do so much after the first two.
Right.
Like, they really did a lot, so they had to reach a bit. But the last movie, other than the documentary, of course, that we watched for the pod was a movie called The Angriest Man in Brooklyn. And I wanted to include this because this was the last one that was released theatrically
while he was alive,
prior to his death. And it was a bit of a smaller movie, and it's a remake of a foreign film.
Remake!
I know.
Sequel!
Oh, also, if you haven't listened to our other Bill and Ted...
Triggered.
Listen to that podcast, because it talks about remakes, reboots, etc. And a lot of the movies on this Robin Williams one is actually a reboot of something,
almost
right?
Almost all of them.
Insomnia was a reboot. Flubber was a remake. Angriest Man was a remake. was the other one?
Hook was kind of, not that we watched it, yeah, but Hook was
kind of a reimagining.
The only one that wasn't was Fern Gully.
Yeah.
And that was just because it's a sad commentary on the world.
Mm-hmm, for sure. But yeah, so The Angriest Man in Brooklyn, it's about a guy who's just really disenfranchised with everything, and he has serious anger issues, and he goes to the doctor, and he's already pissed, right? He goes to the doctor.
Yeah, because he got hit on the way there. Oh, yeah,
no, he's having a terrible day. And he finds out that he has a, what is, and it's not a tumor, but he has something in his head.
So he has a brain aneurysm.
Okay. He,
which is like a, it's like a blood clot, right?
Yeah, and it's pretty bad, and it's near the brain stem, and he's freaking out. He says, just give me a number. Give me a number. What is it?
And the doctor's not his normal doctor.
Yeah, it's Mila Kunis, and she is making up for the doctor who's out of town. And she's had a bad day too, right?
Oh, my bad. An aneurysm is like your blood vessel has like a weak spot that makes a big bubble.
Gotcha. Okay, see,
That's a weird thing to happen.
I'm not a medical guy. I don't know this shit.
How would that's such a weird thing to happen to you, that one day one of your blood vessels just gets kind of weak, so it just makes like a bubble.
Yeah.
Filled with blood, and then one day it might explode, and then you're dead.
Yeah.
That's like a weird...
That's happy.
Anyway, sorry to be depressing. No, you're good. It's just weird.
But anyway, Mila Kunis, her character, she's having a really shitty day too. And Robin Williams is like talking about dead cats, and her cat had just died.
It didn't just die, it jumped out a window.
Yeah, but that caused the death. And so she's pissed too, and she tells him that he has 90 minutes to live, right?
Because there's a magazine sitting there that says, how to cook a turkey in 90 minutes.
It's a perfect 90-minute meal, right? And so his life flashes before his eyes, and he's still pissed. But he's like, I've got to get my affairs in order.
I'm going to go home. And he goes to his law office.
Right, and his brother is played by Peter Dinklage. They're like, hey, if you found out you had 90 minutes to live, what would you do? And one of the guys is like, well, I'd bang my wife.
And he's like, that sounds like a good idea.
And so he rushes home, and he meets up with his wife, and he's like, come on, let's have sex. And she's sitting there with the neighbor.
Turns out she's been having an affair.
And he's not, like, a young pool boy guy. Like, he's an elderly guy, but apparently...
I mean, age appropriate, but yeah.
But I feel like he rushes into it, and he's been an asshole for years, Robin Williams
Since
has.
Since their son died.
Right, and it was a tragic, kind of out-of-nowhere accident, like a motorcycle accident or something, in which the son died. And since then, Robin Williams' character has never been the same. And so him coming home and be like, come on, let's have sex. Get this neighbor out of here. It's really off-putting. And she's like, I hope you would die. And he's like...
you got your wish.
He's like, it's your lucky day. So he's running around and he plans a party for himself. And he tries to invite everyone he knows and only one person shows.
I mean, he only gives him 30 minutes.
Right.
So.
Very short notice, obviously. He's going to die.
Right.
But only one guy shows at the party, and it's a guy from high school who he didn't really know.
And who he's still mad about stealing his girlfriend, like, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, like, and so he doesn't have a good time there. But this whole time, he's trying to reconnect with his other son, who went to law school, became a lawyer, but he decided instead that he wanted to be a ballroom dancer.
I'm not upset that he became a ballroom dancer. I'm upset that he spent all the money on law school only to become a ballroom dancer.
Well, Robin Williams wanted the other son to be there, and he died.
Doesn't matter. That's still a lot of money.
That's pretty shit. He keeps trying to get a hold of the son, and the son's like, no, fuck him. He hates me and my life decisions, and I want nothing to do with him. I won't take his calls. And he's running around. Meanwhile, Mila Kunis
is trying to find him.
And so she's following his steps. She goes to his office and tells Peter Dinklage, and he's like, oh no, we have to figure this out. They get a hold of his wife. The wife's like, he just left. They go to the...
Because if Mila Kunis doesn't find him, she's like, and he dies, she's liable because she didn't admit him to the hospital.
Right, he just ran out.
Which, so, I mean, it's not the greatest reason to try to find someone, but...
Right, because she's trying to cover her own ass because she's been having an affair with one of the other doctors.
Who's never going to leave his wife.
Right. Because
they never do.
Mm-hmm. And she's a pill popper, and she has all these problems in her life. And the last thing she needs is for this asshole of a guy to end
ruin
up
her career.
Having her lose her job. So they're chasing him, and he finally tries to go to his son's dance studio. And before he gets there, they meet up. Mila Kunis meets up with Robin Williams on the Brooklyn Bridge.
And he tries to kill himself.
Yeah, he jumps. he ends up only, like, what, breaking his ankle or something?
I don't even think he broke anything.
Well, he's definitely limping along. He hurts himself, for sure.
Yeah, but he's mostly cold.
But Mila Kunis helps out, helps take him to his son, and he goes to the hospital. And instead of dying that day, he ends up spending 8 days. Which, I mean, a miracle, right?
Right, nobody thought he was going to live that long.
He should have died earlier. The 90 minutes was actually a pretty good diagnosis.
Yeah.
All things considered.
The other doctor was like, you know, this looks pretty bad. Mm-hmm. He could die in 90 minutes. We don't know.
Right. And throughout the movie, there are funny moments, right? He gets a camcorder from James Earl Jones, who's a stutterer, and it is hilarious. It is a really great scene showing how frustrating it is for Robin Williams.
Like, he's trying to be nice to this guy.
And for God, poor guy.
And look. Look, under normal circumstances, like, it's whatever. But knowing he only has 90 minutes, he can't really afford to wait.
Mm-hmm.
Under normal circumstances, it would be mildly irritating. But under this circumstance, it's like,
hurry the fuck up! I need to,
I'm gonna die.
And the whole reason he wants a camcorder is because he feels like he doesn't have enough time to see his son. So he records this really beautiful video.
Well, he starts to. He tries to.
Yeah, but he pours his heart out to his son.
But then he gets angry, and then he realizes, like, he can't even make a video for his son without getting angry.
Because of his damn aneurysm.
Right, because he gets so angry.
Right. And the guy who films it actually ends up stealing the camcorder.
I mean, what would you do? This guy asked you to record him, and then just straight up passes out, like...
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
You know, and he was homeless, so it's not like he had a whole lot of disposable income to just be like, eh, I can pass up a new camcorder. I don't blame the guy.
No.
But this movie really kind of, like, hit home, because my...
Well, he didn't actually steal it.
No.
Robin Williams woke up.
He
kind of
left it.
No, and he just left it there. I mean, what are you going to be like, hey, dude?
Yeah. But his death kind of brings a lot of people together and ties up a few strings. Like, in his 8 days, he's able to reconnect with his brother, have some one-on-one time with his son, really mend some of those... burned bridges that he had. And the movie kind of hit home for me, because my dad, he has anger issues and he lashes out at people, and sometimes he's burned bridges too, and I don't love him any less, but it is difficult, and his blood pressure, I'm assuming, is really high,
probably.
So if they said that he had a heart attack or something, I wouldn't be surprised, but it would be really sad. But I wouldn't be surprised if something like that would happen out of the blue for him. And so this kind of hit home for me. I thought Robin actually did a really good job, even with his disease that he was struggling with.
Yeah, I don't know how far along it was at that point when he was filming.
Mm-hmm. But he was, I mean, he was still himself in this. I think that he did a good job. What would you give it, popcorn bucket-wise?
3.5. It was really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It wasn't groundbreaking or anything.
It was a solid film. All right, so before we jump into the documentary Robin's Wish... What are some of your favorite Robin Williams movies that we haven't talked about yet?
I mean, I really like his animated work, but
mm-hmm.
we talked about some of it, and, like, Happy Feet and all that.
Yeah, always.
But, like, Mrs. Doubtfire is always a really good one to look at. That one's really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually really like one of his other serious movies. It's called 1 Hour Photo.
Mm-hmm.
And
I kind of remember that one. What was that one about? I forget.
Basically, he plays this... And younger people probably don't remember what it was like, but when you get, you know, when you go to CVS and you get photos developed, well, back in the day, somebody had to, like,
manually hand develop
do it.
Them.
Yeah. So he plays a developer at a 1 hour photo lab. He's a bit much. He's really eccentric, and he basically develops this obsession with this family that is always coming in and bringing their photos, and they have, like, a young son. And doesn't he, like, buy him, like, toys and stuff? And I remember... And he, like, breaks into their house. It's kind of a sad movie because his character is very much, like, obsessed with them. But he doesn't really want to hurt them. Do you remember?
I remember this, yes.
You remember
he's
just, now.
He's a creep.
And he's, like, really obsessed
he's
with the kid.
Sad. Yeah.
He's sad. He's lonely. He doesn't have any family or friends or anything.
So he feels like a kinship with the family because
he's seeing their memories all the time. And
right.
He feels like he's there. And I really like it's a very complex character. And so I thought that it really showed his acting chops because He is kind of funny sometimes, but mostly it's just kind of like the complexity of a mental illness and mm-hmm. being sad, but also just wanting so bad to fit in and have a family. And I really like that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some of his serious roles, I like him as a comedian, but serious roles. Okay, so we already discussed a couple, but you have Good Will Hunting is a good serious role that he did. He did.
I forgot about that one.
Mm-hmm. He did The Dead Poets Society. That was a pretty serious one.
I've not seen that one.
It's really good. I watched it in high school, I think. And some of the ones are kind of semi-serious. Like, I think Bicentennial Man, Patch Adams, Jack. They're semi-serious. They're funny, but...
also serious.
They have some really serious tone there. Like Jack, for instance, right? He plays a 10-year-old kid who's in a body that ages four times too fast.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Yeah, so he's like in the fourth grade, but he looks like one of the teachers. And so he like goes into the liquor store and tries to buy them alcohol. And he's doing all these things that a kid would do, but he's stuck in this older man's body.
Mm.
And so there's kind of like a weird disconnect kinda there. Kind of like
Big.
Yeah, kind of like Big. Or like backwards Benjamin Button. Let's see. You said Mrs. Doubtfire is mm-hmm. a fun one. Jumanji.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Love Jumanji.
The original, not the ones with The Rock.
I mean, those are funny too, but there's something about Alan Parrish.
I don't know. Is Jumanji an original or is it a remake?
That's a remake. No, it's a sequel. Because they reference Alan Parrish.
No. The first one with Robin Williams.
Oh, no, that's an original.
Is it?
It's based on a book. Yeah, there was a kid's book called Jumanji. Hmm. Now, Zathura, that's a fucking ripoff. That's not even a sequel. That's a ripoff.
I actually think that one's based on a book, too.
Me too, but it's still pretty...
dicey?
Yeah, pretty ripoff-ish. But he did all the Night of Museums. He did RV. He did Man of the Year.
RV was not his best work.
No, but see, they can't all be hits.
You're not wrong.
Right. And he did Good Morning Vietnam. He did some TV work with Mork and Mindy.
I think that's actually where he got his start.
Mm-hmm. Well, he did a couple of other things, but his stand-up specials, he was really popular in those too.
He's a very funny comedian.
Oh, yeah. He's hilarious, but I love that he kind of spans into serious work a little bit more.
Well, he had, like, professional acting lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't he go to, like, Juilliard?
I think so.
Man, smart guy.
Wasn't he with...
Christopher Reeve.
Yeah, they trained together. They mm-hmm. were in class together.
I mean, that's actually kind of goes into the last movie on the list, Robin's Wish, right? And this is where we learn some of this stuff. It's a documentary that just came out, and it's talking about his disease, right?
Not a lot of people know about it because they didn't really mm-mm. talk about it. When he died, they pretty much were just like, he had depression, and so he killed himself.
Yeah.
But that's not entirely true.
In fact, that's really kind of far from the truth, because he did have depression.
But he didn't know, the depression was, a lot of it was caused by a disease.
But it talks about his legacy, and the movie is mostly told from the point of view of his wife, because she's the one who kind of saw his day-to-day decline. It was a form of dementia that he had.
It's called Lewy body dementia.
Lewy body.
Basically, the symptoms are that you start losing who you are. It makes you paranoid. It makes you suicidal. It kind of causes your body to not be able to work correctly, and you get really tired. And some of the symptoms are a type of depression, but you do get dementia, and you can't function, and you lose pretty much who you are.
Yourself. And it was interesting to see, because the doctor said that people who are extremely brilliant or strong-willed, they can try to push it off
longer than other people.
Right, and that's why he was able to function
as well as he was. Because when they actually did the autopsy, they realized that his brain was pretty heavily affected.
Mm-hmm. It was fried. And he'd been to neurologists in the past because he was worried that he was having problems, and they misdiagnosed him. They're just like, there's nothing wrong with you, dude. Maybe you're just not feeling yourself.
But they diagnosed him with Parkinson's. That's what...
It was Parkinson's thing?
Yeah, because of his hand. He was having trouble with his arm and his hand. But it also can cause hallucinations. And they think likely that he was having issues seeing things. It causes all kinds of tremors, stiffness, slowness.
Mm-hmm.
It can be diagnosed as other things. It's not a very widely researched disease.
Right, and when you're Robin Williams, you're in the spotlight a lot, and you're very brilliant. Absolute genius, right? In more than one sense of the word.
I mean, yeah. And the disease is always fatal.
Right. And but when you're that quick on the draw, comedic-wise, when you're missing steps, when you don't come up with the punchline...
People notice.
And you feel like a fucking failure.
Well, and it also, the disease itself makes you more paranoid, and right. So...
And like we said earlier with Night at the Museum, he kept asking the director, hey, is this okay? Am I doing all right? Is the scene working?
And because, that was never something he'd done before.
Right, because he had faith in his ability as a comedian.
He
and
knew
actor.
He was doing good.
Right. And in the documentary, it talks to a lot of his old comedian friends. And someone who lived in his kind of hometown area north of San Francisco.
They were doing open mic nights.
Yeah, like, and on a weekly basis, they would just go out and just do improv.
Yeah, and Robin would come to this just local open mic, and they'd mm-hmm. pack the place. And
but as his disease progressed, he stopped going as often. And when there were, like, social events that he should go to, he'd be like, no. I don't want to go.
I don't really feel like going.
I don't
going.
Feel like it. And for Robin, that was really out of the ordinary.
Because he loved people.
Mm-hmm. And people loved him. And so his wife, she knew something was up. He couldn't sleep, and he had insomnia.
Well, they couldn't sleep together because he would just, like, thrash, and mm-hmm. he couldn't sleep well. And so they were sleeping in separate rooms, not because they were having issues, but because they just, out of necessity...
Right, and so she talks about his decline a lot, and then after she discovered what the disease was, she went on the talk show network, or the talk show circuit, and tried to tell everybody, look, he hung himself, yes, but he wasn't depressed, he wasn't suicidal, he had dementia, he lost his mind, and that was the only way.
And in fact, it says that most times it does often end in a suicide, because mm-hmm. you just don't understand, like, your brain, you don't understand why it's functioning that way, and it kind of makes you paranoid and delusional, and so it just forces you down that road.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like, oh, I'm depressed, I hate my life. It's more like, my life isn't mine anymore.
I'm confused, I don't know who I am. I remember being a certain way, but I am not that way now. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. And you see things.
Yeah.
And I can... And you can't... Your body doesn't function. It not only attacks your mind, but the rest of your body as well. So you can't... You can't walk as well. You can't hold things. You can't do things as well.
And
so,
meanwhile, Robin Williams is trying to ride a horse in Night at the Museum.
Yeah.
Like...
I don't know if he rode the horse or they had a stunt double, but still.
I mean, sitting upright on a horse isn't too hard. But if you're doing it for, you know, an hour on a shoot or something, I imagine it could get pretty hard.
I mean, my grandmother has dementia, and she doesn't... Some days she remembers who I am, and some days she doesn't, so...
Yeah.
I can only imagine, because I know this is a worse form, because it has so many other symptoms.
Yeah, I can see my grandma has Alzheimer's, and at the beginning she was like that. She kind of lost herself, but she's so far gone now, it's not a big thing. But your grandma, she's still, like, she's fully functioning, but...
Well, like, she functions as well as any other really old person that's had a lot of health issues over mm-hmm. the years. She'll, like, forget things that...
Like, what house she's in or who she's living with.
It's kind of sad, but, like, you'll see her do something, and you'll ask her about it, and she'll say, I didn't do that, and when you just saw her do it 2 minutes ago.
Right. And it's that sort of disconnect between reality and what your brain is comprehending that you can't have when you're a celebrity.
Yeah, because it's so... They're so public.
Yeah, there's no hiding it. So, anyway, she went on the circuit, and she talked about it, and she tried to raise awareness for it. We just learned about it in the documentary some 4-5 years later after he died. So, it's not widely known. He's just known for having killed himself.
It was 6 years ago.
Yeah, and I remember I was working in South Carolina at the time. Like,
it was really sad for us.
It was a long time ago. I cried a lot. That's probably the hardest death I have experienced.
For someone you didn't know?
Yeah. And I mean, I know this sounds really wrong, but I think I might have cried more for Robin than I did for my own grandma.
Yeah.
Because it was so, like, sudden.
For your grandma, it was different because you got to go, you got to say goodbye.
Yeah.
You knew she was gonna...
And we knew that she was old and that she'd lived a very full and wonderful
and
life.
She was ready.
And it felt like Robin had so many good years left,
yeah.
Right? Like,
it is a little different when you know you're going to die and you get to say goodbye and you get to... I mean, it's still hard, but
mm-hmm.
it's different.
And you grow up with them in your life on TV, in movie theaters. They kind of shape your personality even some. right?
Right.
Like, there's certain actors and musicians and things that influence your whole life. And Robin Williams was one of those for me. Same for, like, Jim Carrey, right? Like, both of their works just really impacted me.
What kind
of
thing of, like when Steve Irwin died, that was really hard for me.
Oh, God, yeah. Especially because you had an interest in zookeeping.
Yeah, like, he definitely drove me to a passion in animals, and mm-hmm. that was really hard for me, so.
Yeah, and, but imagine just, you know, for me, that was really, really rough. And knowing that he had a disease rather than just, oh, you know, he's depressed, he's not on medication, I think it legitimizes it.
Not, but you shouldn't downsize the depression.
Oh, no. I'm not trying to do that. I had depression. Like, I get it. But there's a difference between, you know, having depression and then having a degenerative disease that's undiagnosed. Right?
Yeah, it is a lot worse. It is a lot worse disease. Not that depression isn't bad.
But you can get medication for depression. Depression isn't always lethal.
Right, sometimes this you can disease, live through it. This disease is always lethal. Correct. They say that you only live about 8 years after a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. And he
had been struggling for several years.
So we don't know how long he had the disease. He could have had it for 5 years and
no one would have known.
He was just such a brilliant guy. He pushed through it.
And it just got worse and worse.
Yeah, but you hear from all these people in his life, neighbors, and like he was an avid bicyclist, and he went on a trip with one of his buddies, and he just wasn't himself. He forgot where he was. He didn't know. He was like, "Hey, when are we? How long have we gone? What's our time?" And then 5 minutes later, "Hey, what time is it?" And then 5 minutes later, "Hey, we have to hurry up," you know. And that's something that he didn't do, and so they could tell that something was
off.
Kind of off about him. And that was just like a week before he died. Knowing that about him, I respect him more for having like suffered with that. The same with what happened with Chadwick Boseman, right?
Yeah,
he was diagnosed. He knew what he was going through.
But the rest of us didn't.
And so in retrospect, knowing that he died of cancer and knowing that he had it for a while, you're like, holy shit. He did all that work struggling with this disease and no one knew. It's the same with Robin Williams. Yeah, the difference is he didn't even know.
He didn't know what the disease was. He knew something was wrong and they were going to doctors, but they weren't telling people and it was just...
It's not like he went on Jay Leno either and he was like, "Hey, I'm losing my fucking mind." Like, yeah. No, when you're Robin, you show up and you make people laugh and you bring people joy. And then you go home and you cry because you don't know why you don't feel okay. But it's really depressing, but God, what a legacy. Even years later, every year on his anniversary of his death, people post. I think it needs to be National Robin Williams Day. I really do think that there needs to be a day for him. Much like, you know, there's Elvis Presley and John Lennon and things. He is a icon. Legend. Yes, absolutely.
Of tomorrow.
Speaking of legends of tomorrow.
Or of yesterday.
Our next podcast is going to be about streaming a lot of superhero shows, so tune into that. Anyway, sorry, that's a bit of an aside.
I mean, it was sad.
It's sad, but...
The documentary was really informative, and I thought it did a good job of showcasing mm-hmm. things. I don't know how... I know his last wife was in it, but I don't know how the rest of like his kids feel about it or anything.
I know that I follow Zelda Williams, his daughter, mm-hmm. online, and she's always talking about how, you know, you can't take his quotes from a movie and attribute it to him, because at the end of the day, those were written by someone for him to say.
Yeah.
And you can't be like, "Oh, well, this was his philosophy." Like, no, you don't know my dad. That's not the way he was. Don't put words in his mouth. And you have to be respectful. And some people just aren't respectful for the dead online.
Some people are jerks.
Mm-hmm. Overall, they really focus on just a few people in the documentary. But mm-hmm. they don't go to a big ton of celebrities. And I liked that.
Yeah.
It could have been like, you know, you take Martin Short or someone. He's like, "Oh, I knew Robin so well," and da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And then...
These were definitely people, like, his neighbors.
Right. They didn't pull Billy Crystal and Ellen DeGeneres.
Then, like, his, like, roommate in college and stuff.
Right. It was really close people. But they did discuss how he and Christopher Reeve were really good friends and how they worked together. And when Christopher Reeve was diagnosed...
After the accident.
Yeah, Robin was right there with him from the beginning because they were really close friends.
I mean, he didn't know. They didn't know.
Exactly, but you can't cure it. You can only kind of deal
with it. Prolong
it. Yeah. So we're not ending on such a sad note. Do you have a favorite Robin Williams line from anything? Is there something that he has said in a movie or in real life that you're like, oh, you know, that's...
Be yourself.
Mm, a very good one. Her hair. She's punctual.
Punctual.
You know, I really liked his stand-up sketch. He talks about golf.
Yeah.
And how it's a Scottish sport.
I think I've seen that.
It's really funny about what golf is. And that was a comedy sketch that really stuck with me. I also really loved... In Patch Adams, he plays a doctor who wants to make kids feel better. And instead of, like, focusing on medicating them up and doing treatments and things, especially for cancer patients, his main goal was to keep them comfortable and make them happy. And even though it's not one specific quote, like, that idea really, like, stuck with me. If you're suffering, sometimes laughter is the best medicine. When my grandma was dying, she was having treatment and stuff. It's whatever. But seeing her with family and seeing her, like, spark up and laugh, and, oh, hey, it's good to see you, that lifted her spirits and made her feel better than being in the doctor's office.
Right.
You know, every time.
All right, so like we mentioned earlier, next time we're going to talk about some superhero shows, Legend of Tomorrow, Doom Patrol, The Boys, and Umbrella Academy.
Mm-hmm. All season two. Now, if you need a fix right now, there's an episode of Sloppy Spoilers out that covers episode one of season two of both Umbrella Academy and The Boys. So that's going to be a little bit more of an in-depth kind of dissection of those shows. While, you know, ours is more of an overview of the general feel of the shows on a per-season basis.
Mm-hmm.
But be looking out for that here in the next week or two. Hopefully in the next week, but don't quote me on that. October, full underway. We're already watching things for October.
We're going to be doing a feminist take on horror movies,
mm-hmm.
which I think will be fascinating. It sounds really like... feminist, but I think it'll be really interesting. I've been doing some research, and it seems like it's going to be a really fascinating topic to talk about.
We promise it's not going to be some, you know, liberal social justice nonsense. Like, no, we're actually going to talk about, like, their impact in movies.
And, like, how they brought more of a starring role for females and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. It's big for the horror genre, for
sure.
Right.
Well, did you know the horror genre was started by a woman?
No kidding.
More fun facts like that.
What, Mary Shelley?
You can find out if you listen to the next podcast. I'll tell you then.
I like the way you think.
Fun facts to come.
No fun facts. All sad, depressing facts. And we're also going to be talking about our favorite women in movies. So we have a lot lined up, and we're really excited to be bringing you more content for Undercover Capes Podcast Network. In the meantime, you can check out all our socials at Real Romance UCPN on Twitter, at Real Romance on Instagram and TikTok, as well as an email address, realromancepod@gmail.com. If you want to get it a little bit more personal, I'm at Banfing Bob on Twitter, and Brittany is at BookNerd528. Also, I'm sorry, that's her Instagram, not
yes.
Twitter. Her Twitter is RCA's Blondefish, but she rarely checks it, so...
good luck.
Yeah. And also, we've been getting some attention on Facebook. We appreciate it. We don't check it very often, but we thank you for interacting.
I look at the page. I just don't like...
We don't update it very often.
No.
We're more likely to post a TikTok than
we are literally never... We've only uploaded like two TikToks.
And we're still more likely to upload a TikTok than go on Facebook. So, we love hearing from you. Please get a hold of us. Let us know. Even if it's just dropping a, hey... I listened to your podcast. Good job. Because that lets us know.
Are we on iTunes?
We might be. I know the Undercover Capes is on Spotify, and I think it actually might be on Apple. I would have
you
to double check that.
You should give us 5 stars on iTunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because see, when you give us 5 stars, it also boosts the network as a whole, because you know you have to find it
right.
In all the other things. But boosting us as a network means that we're all going to be able to prosper. We can give you more and better stuff. And also shout out to the new chief officer of the Undercover Capes, Josh.
Get it there.
Sorry. Right? Josh, the random dude, he... That's his Twitter handle!
I know, but the way you said it, you were like, the random
dude.
Yeah,
he's just a random guy! No, he's kind of taking over a few things, and so congratulations to him for kind of taking some of the pressure off of Al so we can focus on some other things like Comic Crusaders and reaching out in other aspects. But that's all we have for this podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We appreciate you listening and taking the time. And above all else, keep watching movies. Keep loving one another. Stay safe. And keep it real.
Bye.
Bye, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Real Romance Podcast, courtesy of the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, and share with your friends.